The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by Palm Beach Atlantic University, Orlando. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey friends, welcome to Afternoons with Mike, right here on The Shepherd, heard across the Shepherd Radio Network. I've got a director of results with me today. That's what he's called. It's Jim Roman. He's a speaker, he's a trainer, he's a coach, and it's really great to have you in the studio here today, Jim.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to talking to you today. This is wonderful.
Yeah, this is, now you're used to, I know, being with crowds, you're used to speaking in an audience. If you look back over the shoulder over the past year, what would be most of your engagements? What would your training sessions, would they be in an auditorium? Would they be in a meeting room in a hotel? What would it be? What's the venue?
This would be, it's an amazing venue called Zoom.
Ah, that naturally the past year. Yeah, that would be true. The past year, yes. Hello, that's all of us are Zoomed right out of our brains, aren't we?
Yes, I was very fortunate to be doing Zooming before this all hit, so I was used to it. But normally I'd be speaking around the country through associations and organizations like that at their chapter meetings or their annual conferences.
Mm-hmm. So when you say organizations, would that be business organizations or would it be more the nonprofit sectors? What would it be?
Trade organizations like the National Association of Residential Property Managers is one of the organizations we've been working with for the last 6.5 years.
Okay. And so when you're called in, I mean, I see on your business title, speaker, trainer, coach. So obviously that tells me a lot that obviously you're addressing people. And you're also training, obviously, sales organizations how to be more efficient, how to be more effective, and maybe more motivated. I'm sure that's part of what you would fall into that class of speakers called motivational speaker, right?
Yes, I like to call inspirational speakers.
Okay.
I was told years ago that about motivational speakers last about 24 hours. You get pumped up, and then 24 hours later, you're not motivated anymore. So I want to be an inspirational speaker so that you take action on what we're talking about, whether it's rising above the rest to be the best, how to build a better business so you can live a better life.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the coach aspect.
Yes. A lot of times people, what I love about speaking is people get to see my heart because you're going to get the real Jim Roman. It's not one of those smoke and mirrors, rah-rah kind of guy. I'm going to say, you know, this is what it takes to be successful. Mm-hmm. One is having a purpose and passion, you know, picking a market that is magnetic to you, et cetera, and then putting that into practice. And then people come up and say, hey, I really like what you had to say. There's something about you. Could you coach me? And I say, I don't know. Let's talk about it. Mm-hmm. I always offer a complimentary coaching session to see if it's a fit because I'm very passionate about what I do, and that could be intense for others. It could be right on spot for others.
Yeah. And not everybody's the same. So
yeah,
that's where
true. You
have to find your audience, I'm sure. You know, first of all, let's talk about you. Where did you grow up? What part of the country did you call home back then?
Northeast Pennsylvania, small town outside the Poconos called Nanticoke.
Ah, that's a beautiful area.
It is.
It can be quite wintry up there in the wintertime, right?
It is. It's very wintry. That's why I moved to Virginia via the military and then ended up in Florida 2 years ago.
You know, the Poconos, they have some beautiful skiing spots up there for snow skiers.
They do.
Yeah, not that I've ever been there, but I've got a friend who did.
And I fell down those hills a couple of times myself.
I bet. Anytime I've ever gone snow skiing, my friend, I fell down the hills. That's exactly right. It was always a fun experience, but one that I usually felt for about 3 or 4 days afterwards, if not longer. So I'm kind of glad to be in Florida where there is no snow.
Yes.
Yeah. And it sounds like you are too. So when you're traveling around, are you seeing the kind of the light at the end of the tunnel?
I do. Yes. We go live again in June 17th. I'm booked up for 3 speaking engagements. But yeah, it's starting to open back up. It's really good to start seeing people in person.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's jump back right now to the Poconos for a moment. Let's go back to that area. You grew up in that area. That's a lot different, obviously, than around here. Were your parents believers?
They were. My mom was definitely a believer. My dad did go to church when he had to. I mean, when mom requested him to go. But my mom was, yes. I grew up Catholic up until I got into the Air Force.
Okay. What happened in the Air Force that made you change your belief system?
I think part of it is that my mom forced us or encouraged us to go to church up until 11th grade. So I started, didn't feel it then, but when I was in basic training, I went to church to get away from the TI instructors, and just the sermon, just the feel just didn't feel right. And I just walked away from the church.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you came into a personal relationship with the Lord, tell us about that.
Sure. The short version. I've always knew there was a God. In fact, I remember in my teenage years, I didn't know about Jesus. I didn't know about saviorship. I just knew that there was a God, or at least I believed there was a God. And I said to God, God, if you're my God, you'll give me time to figure out my questions. Like, what are the answers to those questions? So when I was in the Air Force, I was stationed up in Maine, and I had a dream about the devil possessing me, coming into me. And I woke up paralyzed. And I was like, okay, this is not good. And I figured it was just fear. So I said, go back to bed, go to sleep, wake up the next day, everything will be fine. And that's what I did. I woke up, everything was fine. I went and bought a Bible, and I started really starting to study where I needed to be. My mom told her the story. She sent me a Bible. So now I have no Bibles. Now I have two Bibles.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started looking for churches, and I've been Presbyterian. I've been non-denominational Assembly of God to find what places that speak to me. It wasn't until 1996, I had a mentor invited me to a play called Heaven's Gates and Hell's Flames.
Oh, yeah. Familiar
and,
with it.
We're sitting there, and he looks over to me and he says, oh, by the way, I tricked you. And the only reason why I tricked you is because I didn't think you'd come otherwise. And then he looked forward and I said, wait a minute. Well, he's right. I wouldn't have come. So it's good that he tricked me. And so at the end of that play, as you know, they go through every scenario why you didn't accept God. And then there's no other excuses, because that excuse was used in the play and that excuse was used in the play. And I said, okay, it's time for you to go up on the stage and accept Jesus Christ. And I was involved in Landmark Education. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's a study of ontology based out of California. They have offices around the country. And they always say, get out of your own way. Even if you have questions, just get out of your own way. So I said, I want to go accept Jesus Christ. I don't know what that means. Get out of my own way and then walk up on stage. And so I walked up on stage and I accepted Jesus Christ that night.
And what changed?
Nothing at that moment, but the series of things unfolded. So we went out to dinner afterwards to Cheers, and I had all these questions rushing through my head. And interesting enough, our server, we were her first table ever as a server, and her husband was going to Regent University.
How about that?
And I was like, okay, wait, how can you stage this? Your husband's going to Regent, we're your first table. I just accepted Jesus Christ. There's no way he could have staged it. It was just perfect. So I ended up going to the restroom. And I get my greatest ideas in the bathroom for some reason. And I said, what about Jesus?
You're the second person that I've ever heard say that. That's funny.
I just do. I think it's the tile that does that. So I said, what about the Jews, the Jesus and Jews? I got to go ask him this question. So I sat down. I said, what about the Jews? Did they believe in Jesus? He goes, well, I'm a Messianic Jew.
Mm-hmm.
I accepted Jesus Christ when I was 27. I was Jewish up until 27. Then I accepted Jesus. So the person did bring me to the play. And then the first question out of my mouth was, did the Jews believe in Jesus? And he said, yes.
Hmm.
And I was like, well, that means he actually
some
lived.
Did. Yeah,
he existed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's evidence he existed. So that got me to believe in Jesus.
Are you one of these speakers? And I've heard so many guys that are trainers in the way you are, that do it on a professional level, that weave in scriptural principles.
I do. Yes. I speak of God regularly. And I tend to talk about God more than Jesus because I want to be respectful of those in the room that hopefully that will resonate with them. Most people believe in a higher power. Most people believe in God that at least I come in contact with. A lot of times I use that as an example. I'll say the golden rule, do unto others. You believe in a higher power and hopefully to plant seeds in the minds of my audiences.
What do you like the most about what you do, Jim?
I love when the light bulbs go on. So it's a speaker. I'm a speaker trainer coach, but I really love the training side of it because you can see right there that day the impact that you're making. Mm-hmm. You give someone an aha moment and you can see their life has changed or their mindset has been altered and they're going to have a different life.
What did you do before this? Were there like dalliances and other forms of business career that you were part of before you went into this?
Yes, I've been around business my whole life. My parents owned a restaurant growing up. So my dad was in the manufacturing of shoes, got laid off twice, and couldn't only find a job in Miami. being from Pennsylvania, he didn't want to move the family to Miami. So he started a restaurant with my mom. Of all businesses, those are the hardest ones. And I saw the how it took a toll on them, because the stress and the strain. In fact, he died of a heart attack at 62. And when he died, the restaurant died. And that sort of was the catalyst of why I do what I do today. Fast forward, Air Force, running other restaurants. I came in contact with an organization called BNI, Business Network International.
Oh, yes.
I went to a meeting and I felt called, like literally called to do that business, and called up the local franchise owner and said, I want to come work for you. He says, I can't afford you. I said, I'll work for free. I have to do this. And that is really where I really built my confidence that I have today as a speaker and a trainer.
The BNI is a big group and they've been around for a long time. And so when you have these opportunities come in, you're standing before business people and they're always looking for referrals, and it's a way to not only grow their business outside the group, but they grow their business from within inside the group as well, correct?
That is correct, yes.
Yeah, so how do you motivate people who are already motivated in that regard? What's that like?
Well, one of my biggest motivators is to find people's purpose and passion. So I uncovered five drivers to business success. I won't spend the time talking about all five of them, but two of them is, number one, why do you do what you do, your purpose and passion?
Mm-hmm.
I find so often, no matter what people do for a living, a lot of them don't put purpose into that. So if you're a security guard, you're securing a building, but you could be securing lives. Or I remember a janitor story. This isn't a person I knew, but I knew a story of a janitor who, when asked what he did, he didn't say he cleaned schools. He said he created environments for students to learn.
Hmm.
And I was like, wow, that's powerful. And so I want to help people find a purpose and passion in whatever they do. I was talking to a realtor one time and I asked her why she did. Well, we help people buy a house. And that was a real reason. When you dug deeper, it's so they can raise a family and build a community.
Mm-hmm.
And when we could bring that purpose back out in her, she got lit up. She got excited.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one is dreaming again. Most people build businesses and they stop dreaming about having a life. What do you want to do beyond the business? Most people say, I don't know. And so we want to find out their dreams and aspirations, which a lot of times it's travel or giving back to their communities, but they haven't taken the time. They put it on hold.
Mm-hmm. Are you seeing right now, as you're traveling around, are you seeing an enthusiastic group of business people right now, or has COVID worn them down?
I'm seeing, well, it's interesting. My circles tend to be up because I bring them up, but I'm starting to see it starting to pick up. People are getting positive. When it first happened last year of April, I knew that I had to do something. I've been to three bad economies before. I've been in businesses that allowed me to get through those bad economies. And one of the things that I did was just keep a positive attitude.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I was a member of a club and the guy goes, how are your clients doing? I said, they're doing great. No, seriously, how are they doing? I'm going, they're doing great. And he goes, I can't, you're always so positive. And I walked away going, what just happened? And one of my gifts people say I have, I'm Mr. Enthusiastic. They love when I visit because I'm always so happy. So I think if we can keep a positive mindset through my devotionals every morning, reading my Bible regularly keeps me positive, being thankful for my blessings. So it's picking up, and the people around me, I'm making sure it's picking them up because I'm trying to be positive around them.
What's the hardest thing that you find that people deal with apart from maybe what you've just described is losing a little bit of enthusiasm or losing a little bit of vision? Are there other things that you think are really common, bad habits that people have in business that keep their business from really being what it should be?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest ones is they play by a set of rules that somebody else made up for them. We call them big business rules. One of the examples of big business rules, you got to spend money to make money. Who made that rule? A salesperson made that rule, right?
Mm.
Or you don't expect to be profitable for the first 3 to 5 years. Who made that rule? I've actually coached MBA students, their business plans, where it shows them not being profitable for 3 to 5 years. I said, why not the first year? You can do that? I'm like, yeah. So they're playing by other people's rules and they're not finding what works for them. I read a lot of business books and I take what works for me. I don't believe in everything I read, but I find what works for me and I go with it.
Now, there's a lot of groups, and we all hear the ads on radio and television. There's a lot of groups that go into different markets. And let's talk about real estate for a moment. Maybe that's something where they'll do a seminar on flipping homes and saying this is the way to go. When you look at businesses like that, because that kind of falls under the umbrella of similar to what you do, there's a lot of people that would look at that and they think, I'm not so sure I want to get into that. Do you feel that that's a legitimate expression of their time?
Is that what, flipping houses?
I mean, no, just to go to a seminar like that, is that productive for them?
If you're going to, so those types of seminars where they're going to send you their program at the end of it, it's designed to hype you up, get you excited, sell you on the possibility, but the percentage of people who actually succeed in it are very low. In real
estate, that's what I wondered.
Yeah, for example, real estate, 65% of realtors fail in the first 18 months of being in business.
Well, see, you can understand then why people have this thought going into business. It certainly makes sense to me why there'd be a lot of people that would have this thought that I'm probably just going to get beat up for the first 3 years. And there's so many people around them that do. And you mentioned restaurants. I've heard this, and I've never been in the restaurant business, but I've heard that perennially restaurants are one of the most common failing businesses because it is so hard to even survive the first year.
100%. I agree with that. I've experienced that. Yes.
Yeah. So I guess now if I could just put my my compassion hat on for all of those people who are wanting to start a business but a bit fearful, and you're here positively saying, yeah, we can do this. You can do this. You can make money the first year. I think they're going to look at you and they say, how? And that's probably going to be where you say, that's what I'm all about, right?
Exactly, 100%. But I would say to increase the odds of success, if possible, again, buy a business or start a business that you have, there's a passion behind it. I know so many people I've coached who bought a franchise and there's no purpose and passion. I remember one woman, she had this, she had a calendar business. It was a franchise sort of system. And you sell advertising, you put into a calendar, and then you direct mail those calendars to neighborhoods.
Well, we're going to take a break here in a moment. And my guest today is Jim Roman. We're going to hear more about this whole concept of talking as he does and training and coaching. Because we're right now in a market, we're in right now a time where a lot of businesses are indeed seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, seeing some breath, fresh air coming into their businesses. And that's exactly what we want. And that's what we need. And we're going to hear more from a trainer who helps businesses do just that. Jim Roman is my guest. Don't go away. I'll be right back. This is Afternoons with Mike.
You've had this feeling that there has to be more to work than just work. You have a job, but what you really long for is a career, one that makes you feel like you're actually making a difference in the world. At Palm Beach Atlantic University, they understand that your career journey is unique. PBA's Orlando campus offers respected programs with personalized instruction from a Christian worldview that empowers you to realize your goals and career opportunities on your terms. Start your new journey today with Palm Beach Atlantic University Orlando at pba.edu. That's pba.edu. Your degree, your way. pba.edu.
Happy to have in the studio today Jim Roman. He is a speaker, trainer, and coach. He runs his own firm, his own business, and he calls himself the Director of Results. Now, if I were a business person, a business owner, I should say, that would really get my attention. I like that because I think every business owner who signs the checks for his employees at the end of every week, they're wanting results not only from their business, but from their employees. And that's part of what you do.
Yes, exactly.
Now, you mentioned something, Jim, at the close of segment one that I want to pick back up again and go into this because I'm a firm believer in this as well. I've heard it said many times that if you love what you do, if you have a passion about something that you are doing in your work life, that in a real way, you never work a single day in your life if you're loving what you do. Now, how do you get that kind of message into the hearts of every worker? Because if we did, if you were able to do that in all the people you talk with, that's got to make a difference in our whole economy even.
I agree. I talk to people every day and ask them why they do what they do, and it's usually for a paycheck. And that means they're not living their life. So for me, I try to tie, it's part of our process really, but one of the questions I'll ask people, if you had $2 million to $10 million in the bank, time, money, and education was not an issue, what would be your dream job? First thing that comes to mind. And people would say, oh, I can't make money at it. I said, you have $2 to $10 million in the bank. Time, money, and education, kids, family are not an issue. What would be your dream job? Just tell me. Well, I would do something around sports, but you can't make money. And so they're playing by that big business rule. You can't make money at it, but someone's making money at it. So I think it's tying it into your your passion or your position, mm-hmm. or to the prospects that you go after. You know, there are, I was just talking to a skincare specialist, a Mary Kay specialist, and she loves helping teachers. She used to be a teacher and she stopped helping teachers. And I said, well, why don't you go back to helping teachers again? She's like, you're so right. So if you can go after a market that means something to you or you have a background in, that's one of the ways of doing it. But also just knowing you make a difference. One of the things I talk about in McDonald's, back in the day, it used to say 1 million people served, 2 million to 4 billion. And I say to myself at the end of the day, at the end of the week, how many people did I serve? Because that's what's going to save them.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you talk about passion as a motivator versus a paycheck, can you just expand that a little bit? What's the difference? If a person answered you, I'm working, which it seems like now, if I can just be the angel's advocate, I'd rather be that than the other one. If I hear them say that, I'm thinking they're wanting to provide for their family. They're wanting to provide food. They're wanting to pay for rent and maybe the car payment. So they have to work. They need to work. But they often stay stuck in that work mode right now. How do you help them see work for something that you love doing?
Well, first off, if you're working for the paycheck and the paycheck goes down or stops, like recently, it takes a toll on you. I was just talking to a gentleman over lunch. He says, you know, over the last 3 weeks, our revenues have been down and my attitude's been down. I've been desperate, not desperate, I've been depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And so often we allow money to affect us. It used to affect me. I remember my checking account went down, so did my attitude. My checking account went up, my attitude went up. And I said, whoa, we can't allow money to affect me that way. And so going back to the passion, one of the things I work with business owners and even their staff, property management. I told you early on, I worked with property managers. And you can look at it, property management, as I am just collecting rent. Or you can have the attitude as I'm creating a place for people to live on the tenant side or the resident side. And then on the investor owner side, you could say I'm getting a return on their investment so they can live their dreams.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be just a job and that lasts for only so long and you get burnt out. Or you could do it for the tenant side or for the owner side and know that you're making a difference and that gets you out of bed every day and do what you do.
So what would be the first, let's say, couple of issues that a person could ask themselves? You gave us one example a little earlier, but how do I find what is my passion? What do I do to kind of uncover what's in my heart?
Sure. There's a couple of things that I would do. One of the things I would consider as a business is the book Start With Why, Simon Sinek. I saw one of his talks on TEDx on the Golden Circle, and he talks about, so often companies talk about what they do and how they do what they do. But Apple and companies like that talk about why they do what they do. And that's why people do business. People do business with you, not your company. They do business with you, your purpose and passion.
Mm-hmm.
So the first things I would encourage people to do is to start dreaming again and ask the question, answer to the question too, if you had $2 million in the bank or $10 million. And the reason why it's 2 to 10, because I used to say 2 million people, that's not enough. And then I would say 10 million. Well, that's just too much. I'm like, okay, fine. $2 to $10 million in the bank. Everything was taken care of, kids, family, and education. What would be your dream job? First thing that comes to mind. And just ponder on that. Pray on that for a while and see what emotions. And then ask yourself, what is it about that job that you are pumped of? Usually not the job. It's something that job or that profession does for the world.
Mm-hmm.
Get tapped into that. Pray on that. Ponder on that. Meditate on that. And let it just grow.
Now, this fear that people have when they look at their passion, they look at their dream job, and they say to themselves, I really would like to do that every day, but I don't know that I could pay the bills. If I do that, then what's the next step for them?
I would highly recommend talking to a coach or I think if you can find a coach in your area, that's very helpful. Reading helps me. Again, it goes back to the rules that we play by. Oh, I can't do that because I can't make money at it. Again, money's ruling you versus the purpose and passion is ruling you. There's times I make good money and there's times I don't make any money, but I love what I do. And I'd rather love what I do than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing this, this kind of thing for 20 years, 16 in this business, and I wouldn't change it for the world. And it's not easy, but I remember the difference I make when I get up every day, when I go to bed every day. So again, asking yourself, what is it purpose and passion you would have it? And then again, go back to your work. What difference do you feel that you make or want to make?
Mm-hmm. Now you have your own business. You work for yourself.
I do.
So there's nobody signing your paycheck. So it's got to start with you and it's got to end with you in that sense. But yet, as a believer, we have God. So what role do you see for these people who are wanting to get where you are? They're wanting to have passion. They're wanting to have that drive that they see in other people, and they want it. They just don't know how to get there, but they're believers. So what can they do with their faith to help them turn that corner?
So I would first answer the question about how I got where I'm at today. There is a point where I hit a wall a couple years ago, and I, you know, being as positive I tend to be and the blessed I am, I hit a wall. I hit a big wall, and I didn't know what to do. And, you know, I get up every morning, I read my devotional that wasn't working, my Bible wasn't working. I was like, oh, I'm in trouble here. What am I going to do? And something said, Google in YouTube, motivational speakers. And Tony Robbins comes up most times for me.
Yeah.
And I realized that if I can get positive knowledge or positive information into my head, I become more positive myself. And so that's why I do my devotional every morning when I wake up. That's the first thing I do on my phone. I do our daily bread, and I do another one, and it usually resonates with me. So I think that's the first place. Go to your Bible, reflect on the verses in there, and just spend time with God. I've been doing that now 2 years living here in Florida. I moved into my house. I didn't have internet, so I couldn't watch TV. I couldn't do anything else. And so I pulled up my devotional, and that's where they made a big difference for me. So starting there, it makes a big difference.
I agree. And you said you follow a reading plan, right?
The devotional every day that I open up, they have a version every, you know, they have the scripture and then the story around that thing.
Okay. And from the standpoint of, you know, beyond that, then there are, what other choices beyond just opening the word and getting into it, can people practically grow in what it's going to take for them to find this niche?
For me, it's reading business books. So some of the books that I recommend, the first one is E-Myth by Michael Gerber. It's about how to run a business better. The book from there, I would read Built to Sell by John Werlow, which talks about building a business that can run without you. And then the third, the trifecta of my books is Small Giants. It's what small businesses did that big businesses do.
Mm-hmm.
And there are six examples of six companies who chose to build businesses six different ways. Usually you find a mentor, so there's only one way to build a business, and that's not true. And so learning from other people who've been there, done that, following them on YouTube or on their podcasts or shows like yours. I listened to your episode yesterday. That was so motivational. So finding seeking out that resources.
Oh, that's very, very good to hear. I'm glad that you enjoyed it. That's good. We try that. And that's something that, you know, when I hear you say these things, because at this point in my life, I am getting to do exactly what I love to do. And I remember hearing, and I'm sure this will resonate with you, Paul Harvey, the old radio TV announcer years ago, when I first started off in radio, before I ever went into ministry, I was in radio in the early 70s, and I heard him say something as a young man, and it made an impression in my own heart. He said, I am one of the few people that I know of in America that absolutely love doing what I get to do every day, and I love getting to do it with the people that I'm working with. And he said, sadly, so many people I find around me are not able to say that in their life. So he had found that very thing that you're talking about. And I remember thinking, it must be important. It really would be cool that if I could have and share that enthusiasm and love for what he was doing. And it just so happened to be that I was a young man working in communications at that point, very similar to what he was doing, although not on the same level as he was doing it. But he just seemed to have that ability to see through. And I think that's part of what holds a lot of people back, is not seeing through what is keeping them from getting from here to there.
Let me add to you. So I did have a thought to your question. I've asked the question, if you had all the time and money, what would you do? And this guy said, sports. I love sports, anything sports. And at that time, he was doing nothing but sports. And he'd say, I can't make money at sports. What I would say to him today, if he was in front of me, I said, well, do something, anything around sports, whether it's nights and weekends, do something. Volunteer at a sports radio show. Go volunteer at a stadium. But don't do nothing in regards to your purpose and passion. There are people out there that I know that they're never going to find purpose and passion in their job, and they're not going to leave their job. So they're, you know, they're in a bind. What I do want them to do, and I feel the Spirit moving me now, and that is to do something you love outside of work, if nothing, even if it's just for an hour. have a client who loves doing leatherworking. When's the last time you've done leatherworking? Oh, I haven't done it in a long time. Well, as your coach, you don't have a choice. This weekend, you're doing leatherworking. He worked on this knife sheath. He was super excited. He got lit up. And I think if we're doing our purpose and passion, even if it's a hobby, God can speak to us and then maybe give us some direction the rest of our life.
You know, if a person does that, and you correct me if I'm wrong here, but if a person does that, it starts to like a wheel going in their heart, in their mind. And then it's like the next step they do, they kind of follow that same tendency. It doesn't take long, does it, to change one's attitude, as you said earlier.
It just takes a seed, a little tiny seed of energy that you feed it with that passion, whether, again, in this case, leatherworking or woodworking. I have another client who did his first table, and I'm like, when's your next table? Oh, I'm like, when's your next table? He's now done 5 pieces of furniture.
Mm-hmm.
And every time he talks about it, he gets excited. It gets ignited, and it starts to burn, and I think that's what's going to get us going.
Is it possible that it is as simple as this, Jim? Is it that people get fatigued in what they do day in and day out, and they lose sight of their purpose and their zeal? Is it as simple as that?
I think so. I think it's burning inside of us, and eventually a little bit of gets smothered, and you know, a little bit of water, and it starts to just smolder, and then it starts to put the fire out. And mm-hmm. our job is to get that fire started again.
So how do people hear about you apart from having heard you at some other event? How does that happen? How do they hear about the classes that you do, the training sessions that you do?
Well, I do a lot of free stuff for those who I don't know that I want to reach. You can go to my website at jimromanonline.com. I have a blog on there that is in written form because I know people learn in reading. And then I've done a lot of YouTube videos mm-hmm. for people on the principles of business, being positive, getting organized, and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very great that you have this. Your website is jimromanonline.com, jimromanonline.com. And people can find out about these classes and the different sessions that you provide. When we come back in just a moment, we're going to be talking about the thing that has impacted every business and has impacted, as we said earlier, Jim's ability to speak to people face to face. Obviously, I'm talking about the pandemic that, by God's grace, it looks like a lot of things are changing and we're actually pulling back into a sense of normalcy from. But we're going to find out what can be expected for his business in this next year. Don't go away. That's Jim Roman, my guest. My name is Mike Gilland, and you're in tune to The Shepherd. We'll be right back.
Are you looking to make a fresh career start? As Florida's top Christian college, Palm Beach Atlantic University Orlando knows your faith is important to you, and it should be to your school as well. PBA Orlando offers a faith-based experience unlike any other. Whether it's a degree in leadership ministry or counseling, PBA combines biblical concepts from exceptional professors who bring years of real-world experience as leaders in their fields. Call them today at 844-PBA-ORLANDO. That's 844-PBA-ORLANDO. Education for your soul as well as your mind.
In the studio with me today is Jim Roman. He is a coach, he is a speaker, and he trains businesses of all types. And, you know, I've known people like you before, Jim, where they're really willing, because I believe so many of the principles of success in business, this apparently is how you guys do it. You tell me if I'm wrong, but they're very similar. I mean, the principles are very similar no matter what kind of business that you have.
Yes.
And that's really kind of the thing that you've got. Now, I know there's stuff to learn. If you've made bowling alleys, you can't necessarily just translate everything that you've done there into building rockets. I mean, I obviously get that you might need to do a little research on what you're going to be doing. I understand all that. But the big city principles behind all of these things are very similar. And that is something that you must have to study up on a little bit to kind of get the edge for these businesses. How does that work?
Sure. So there's 5 functions of business all businesses have, we find. I simplify it. One day I was having my entrepreneur seizure, thinking about getting out of the business, selling my business. One Sunday morning, pulled out the Sunday paper and I said, you know, I need to get a job. What would I be able to do? Well, I can do marketing, sales, janitorial stuff, director stuff. And I realized as a business owner, I have 10 jobs, 10 hats. And that became overwhelming. And then over time, I thought through it. And it really comes down to 5 functions. You got to bring in business. You got to get the work done. Then you need to hire and train more people to get the work done. Someone needs to do the admin finance to get paid. And then if you're lucky, create raving fans to get referrals, reviews, and more revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So it really comes down to those five functions that all businesses run. What makes a difference is the operation side of it. If you're a restaurant, you run it one way. If you're a handyman service, it's another. That's where the art and science of running a business comes in.
Mm-hmm. So when you go in and you get a call and they're asking you to come train for a business that you've never done, how do you do that?
So typically, with my B&I background, I've worked with hundreds of industries. So that's the blessing I had with that role. But I do homework. When I got involved in the Property Management Association, I not only spoke, but I stuck around to conferences. I sat in on sessions. In fact, someone came up to me and says, I really like you as a speaker. I go, why is that? Well, you stick around and you learn the industry. You don't just show up, throw up, and leave. You learn our business. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what else would I do? I got to know how to help you guys, right? Mm-hmm. So I really do my homework and due diligence.
Oh, that's great. We mentioned at the close of the last segment that without a doubt, as you've already mentioned, COVID had a major impact in 2020. And I'm sure that you had a lot of events that had to be canceled.
Yes.
And so that's never fun, is it?
No, it's not. No, it's not. The thing is, you know, this not happened to a lot of people, a lot of generations. I was fortunate when I was in the Air Force, I was on a chemical warfare team where our job was to decontaminate weapons of and so I saw videos of things that chemical weapons could do to you, and it's very scary. So when COVID hit, I wasn't as scared, you know, because of what I saw. And so I knew that I could be a light for people, keep them positive, and keep my clients from going negative. And mm-hmm. So fortunate enough that we kept them in business. In fact, they've grown since then, again, staying positive and looking at the future.
Now for you, did you find that the transition to doing virtual training, was there a big drop in your business as a result of doing that? Or some people that I've talked to, it actually stayed even. Some even grew during the time of virtual business. How did that work for you?
Ours is pretty much even for the most part. We were projected to go up, so you could argue that it was down, but it pretty much stayed even. The toughest stuff for me is I like meeting people. I'm an ambivert, which is half extrovert and half introvert. And so my not being able to see you change and the impact that I mm-hmm. make does affect our results. But ultimately, I would say we stayed even.
Now, you said you were using Zoom before the pandemic.
Yes.
How long?
1 year, actually. I have a client in Houston to this day. We go visit them every month and a half, work with their staff, train their staff, and then coaching sessions every week. And I can't go to Houston every single week. So we turned on Zoom. At first, it was a little awkward because, you know, it's, you know, mechanical, technological, and got used to it. So when the pandemic hit, it's like, hey, you've been on Zoom for a year. What are you worried about? I'm like, yeah, I have been on this for a year. So yeah. I was very blessed to have that.
Oh, that's great. So now you mentioned already that you're kind of getting ramped up for the summer and some live events are happening.
Yeah.
Will those events, are they in Florida or are they elsewhere?
We have one in Houston. We have one here in Florida. We have one in Virginia and another one in Alabama.
Now, I know that Texas is wide open and Florida is getting there and has been for the most part open, but I'm not sure about these other areas. What's it going to be like going into there?
As we've been seeing, because of the association work with, they're trying to take everything into effect. It's hybrid. So if you're not comfortable, you'll do virtual. If you're going to meet in person, you'll still do the social distancing. Mm-hmm. I always tell people, regardless of what you think, you should be respectful of both parties. I know friends are super scared and those who are not scared at all. And I respect both sides.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it'll be good. As long as people are responsible and respectful, I think we'll be fine.
At the end of the day, at the end of the conference, when you're speaking as a coach, what makes you know in your heart that your audience got the message?
The biggest thing is when they come up to me and they say to me, "This, you were great." And I then ask them, what was great about my presentation? And if they can't tell me, other than I was energetic, I did not do my job. When they said, oh, I like when you said this and I'm going to implement that tomorrow, then I made the impact that
okay.
I wanted to.
Do you feel people come up to speakers like yourself? You do this for a living. Is flattery a part of what you get, or is it just really sincere gratitude, genuine thankfulness? What do you think that is?
For me, I want to know it's genuine thankfulness. I want to know that I actually made a difference. I had a mentor once say, back in the day, there were two speakers. And when the first speaker orator spoke, everyone said, great speech. And when the second orator spoke, they said, let's charge. And I want to be that person that motivates people to move to action, mm-hmm. because that's what's going to make a better world for us.
What are you hoping for 2021?
2021, that people get back to growing their businesses, making an impact with their businesses, and, you know, being blessed. Actually, look at the good we have in the world right now.
From a principled standpoint, if you were to kind of, I guess, maybe help a business owner who might be listening today, and they're saying, you know, I don't know whether to kind of dig down deeper and invest deeper into it, or should I just kind of hold my current rate that I'm doing right now? Would this be a time to plow down and go deeper into the business, or just kind of like holding the cards? What would you see?
I'd be honest with you, it'd be based on each situation. Right? There are some people who should not be in business. Other people who just need to push through their business to make it happen. I was just talking to a gentleman today. Again, he's like, you know, I'm a little bummed out. I'm a little depressed. Revenues are down. And then he turned around at the same sentence and said, oh, business has been up this week and it looks like there's more business next week. And he didn't change his brain from being negative to being positive. Mm-hmm. So I think for some of us, we need to be patient. Others dig a little deeper. You know, last year was not easy for anybody, but I knew there's always business to be had if you're willing to hustle for it. Mm-hmm. Always, always there's business to be had if you're willing to hustle for it.
I love the fact that you start off every day with your devotions.
Thank you.
Is there a prayer that you find yourself praying regularly?
I always start off with, I start the day with Our Father and I finish the day with Our Father.
And why is that?
Because it's the way Jesus taught us to pray to Our Father. Thank Him for who He is. Forgive us for our trespasses. Give us this day. One of my favorite movies of all times, this will sound weird, is Groundhog Day.
Oh, really?
Groundhog Day.
Now, that's the first time I think anybody's ever told me
that.
It
is the biggest spiritual awakening I've had in any movie I've ever watched.
Phil!
So if you look at Groundhog Day, you could say that Bill Murray in the beginning of the episode did all the horrible things and then he did all the good things. But if you think about it, every day we get a new day. We get a new Groundhog Day to start over. Mm-hmm. And as you watch the movie unfold, he tried to make an impact in more lives in the course of 24 hours than most of us do in a lifetime. Mm-hmm. So every day I wake up, it's a new Groundhog Day. And it's like, how many people can I impact for God's word world? And if I don't get it right today, tomorrow I'll get another try.
And that is that part of you that I love, that optimistic part. You're willing to say, hey, we didn't get it all done today, but we got another day coming. And we want to spend it for the glory of God. Jim Roman is my guest, and thank you so much for coming in today. This has really been a lot of fun.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. This is awesome.
It's been great. Before we go today, we've got time for an interview that I did at the Faith and Family Coalition Conference about a week and a half back. It was a great time to meet a lot of people that I've never gotten to talk with before, including Madison Cawthorn, who is the youngest member of Congress. He was injured in an automobile accident at age 18, now serving from a wheelchair, but that's not stopping him from doing a great work for our country. So excited to have with me today Madison Cawthorn, the youngest of the representatives in the United States, 25 years old. I've got shoes older than that.
Well, you know what? I think if they were made in the year 1995, they're probably still around because our year, for whatever reason, has a lot of backbone. I think my generation specifically is going to come up and be fighting for our American principles. So I'm sure those are a really good pair of shoes.
I tell you, I'm just amazed at reading about you and seeing your stand, and thank you for what you're doing. The courage that you've gone through to already fight this fight. Now that you're here, you're at the Faith and Freedom Coalition Conference. What are you seeing come from this?
Well, you know, I'm seeing this all over the world. All over the country. I say often that, you know, I try to spend 40% of my time in Washington, D.C., 50% in my district, because I think all representatives should spend a lot of time in their district. The extra 10% that's left over, I try to use that to go and win my generation back from the lies and deceit of socialism.
Now, you know, that is a big task that you're taking on right there. So much has talked about Generation Z and the thoughts and the feelings of the kind of identity politics that are just out there all the time. What are you seeing as the strategies that we can reasonably think could actually turn around
You know what? I think it's in-person events. I think it's getting people together. You know, the segue I was trying to make is, you know, getting to go across the country and to speak at all these events with young people. I get to also see come to events like this here with the Faith and Freedom Rally. And you see the motivation and the passion that the American citizenry is starting to feel, how they realize that their country's going the wrong direction. They would like to change that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the biggest thing that we can do is, one, win our the next generation. I think the best way to do that is to throw events like this where young people can come together, conferences like this, and they can realize that they're not alone, because so many people feel like that they're isolated as a young conservative. They don't think there's any other young conservatives. But the dirty little secret is that the left never wants you to know is there are a significant number of people in my generation who are conservative and who are passionate about this country.
Now, as you take that message, what is the response that you're getting around the country and in your own district?
Well, biggest thing, I think, is a lot of people who are just can saying, wow, it's actually amazing that there are people our age who believe in these conservative values. And you give me passion to want to go do that myself. And so I think it's incredibly important that we encourage young people. As you know, if you see young people running for Congress, you see whatever it is, I encourage people, don't tell them, hey, wait your turn in line. Because right now, my whole line of that is, who are we in line behind? Because whoever's been coming before us has been led us to $28 trillion in debt, a completely porous and open border. We are being mocked on the world stage. Putin's making a mockery of our current president. And so I genuinely believe that right now, people, patriots of all walks of life, whether you don't need a law degree, you don't need a PhD, you just need to be someone who believes in our founding principles. You need to be someone who believes in free market capitalism. You need to be someone who is unafraid to be attacked by the radical left, because you are defending the next generation from their arrows.
With all of that, and with the media kind of at a barrage constantly at young people, what would you think is the number one thing that would be their biggest obstacle that kids today really need to get a hold of and say, hey, this is not the way it is?
You know, that's a great question. I think it's the whole, you touched on it earlier, my friend. I think it's the identity politics. It's saying that, hey, you know what, your entire future is outcome determined based on what race you are, or what your disability is, or what sex you are. That's not the case. This country is completely just based on opportunity, resilience, and hard work.
If you could have your wish from this conference, all the people that are here from around the country, what would you like to see come from this conference?
I'd like to see more patriots getting elected, people who are, again, just normal Americans. Because, you know, the people in Washington, D.C., the cookie-cutter politicians, one, they're afraid of the radical left. Two, they're not dynamic enough to win against the messaging discipline of the left.
Mm.
And so I think that the people who are here at this conference who genuinely believe in these values, who are so fired up, that's what people need to see right now. They need to see people who are genuinely and passionately believe that we have a future in this country and we have a hope for this country. So, but anyways, brother, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my goodness. Madison, thanks for being here. Madison Cawthorne. And that's all our time for today. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next week on Afternoons with Mike.
Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by Palm Beach Atlantic University, Orlando.